From WLVR Bethlehem and Lehigh University, this is the show that gets you behind the real lives of Lehigh faculty. This is Prof Talk.
Hello, everyone. This is Mike Pacita here on WLVR 91.3 Bethlehem. You're tuned into Prof Talk. This week I have Dr. Lloyd Steffen and Danielle Stillman, both professors of practice here at Lehigh University. Why don't you say who you are and what you do at Lehigh?
Well, I'm Lloyd Steffen. I'm a professor of religion studies, and I'm also the university chaplain here at Lehigh.
And I'm Rabbi Danielle Stillman. I'm the director of Jewish student life and associate chaplain.
And do you teach any classes at Lehigh University?
I teach every semester. Because I'm chaplain, I have a reduced teaching load, so I teach one course per semester. And I teach kind of a wide variety of things, but mainly in ethics.
I'm teaching with Dr. Steffen for the first time this semester. We're co-teaching a class on interfaith dialogue, but usually I mostly work with students, staff, faculty, and administration around Jewish life and interfaith work on campus.
So you're co-teaching a class on interfaith dialogue. Why do you think it is important for us to have interfaith dialogue?
Well, there's a lot of misunderstanding in the world about religion. I think we've seen some of that in the recent presidential campaign. And there are many people who believe that the different religions need to encounter one another, reassure one another. Aims of religion are peaceful and not destructive. I mean, there are destructive people in religion, but the idea of interfaith dialogue is really to expand awareness and to go through a learning experience about other religions in the world.
I think I'll just tell a short story to answer that question. This past weekend, the different colleges in the Lehigh Valley, Lehigh, Muhlenberg, Lafayette, Moravian, DeSales, all came together for an interfaith conference at Muhlenberg, assisted by the Interfaith Youth Corps. And so I went with some students from Lehigh, and one of them is a graduate student who's here from Baghdad, from Iraq, and he's a Muslim. He had never left the country before he came to the Lehigh Valley. And we were walking at this conference after lunch, and he was telling me that in Iraq, where he grew up, first of all, until 2003, there was no internet, there was no access to any information besides what the government wanted you to see or hear or read. And he said he'd never met anyone from different religion before. And now that he's here, he'll do everything he can to take the opportunity to learn about other religions and visit other religious sites of worship and meet people from different religions, because he feels like part of the world was closed off to him. And I think that's a big motivation for interfaith dialogue. It just expands your view of how people are in the world to learn about different religions.
How do you think we can best attain a respectable interfaith dialogue?
I think it's important to set some ground rules before you talk to people from different religions, or even before you encounter another religion. And one is that you should go in with a mindset, both sides of the dialogue, or however many people are in the dialogue, should go in with the mindset that you're there to share and learn, maybe to teach, but not to convert or proselytize. It's not about convincing someone that your religion is better or true or right, even though you might think that and really believe that. But it's really just an exchange of information.
I think that's right. I think an attitude of openness to the encounter with others is really an important aspect of what goes on in interreligious dialogue. It's all about a learning experience, and you have to have a desire to learn about people who are doing things that you are not doing, and to understand why that is. And given the complexity of the world today and how much religion is playing a part in many of the great crises of our time, both political crises and social crises, it's really important to have information and an understanding of the role of religion and what the content of these religions are. So it's all about learning when it comes right down to it. Interreligious, interfaith dialogue is really about learning.
And before these conversations start, how could our average listener increase their religious literacy before getting themselves into a conversation about dialogue?
Well, I could read a book, you know. there are multiple ways to do that. Actually, reading a book is not a bad idea, because there are many books out there that are pitched at different levels, many of them quite introductory, and they're sometimes pitched, if you happen to be a Christian, here's how you can start to have an understanding of what Islam is, or if you're Jewish, you could understand how Islam is, or, you know, vice versa. But there are also television programs. We've got 24-hour saturation with cable and things like that. And there are a lot of programs that provide pretty decent information about religion if you bother to look for them. And so we have resources in the media. We have resources in libraries. And, people can also just... get into conversations with people from different traditions. They can visit a mosque. They can go to a synagogue. They can attend a church. They can do different kinds of things to learn about these things. Many religious organizations have open houses, and if you keep your eyes open for them in the Go Guide or something like that, you could avail yourself of an opportunity to go visit and talk to some folks who come from these different religious traditions. It's an eye-opening experience to do that.
Yeah, even on campus, I mean, first of all, you could take a class in religion in the religion studies department, which would be a great way to increase your religious literacy. But also, you could talk to people who you live with. There's a good chance that someone on your hall, in your residence hall, in your fraternity or sorority house, one of your neighbors is from a different religion. And then you can... go to different religious activities around campus. There's bat dinners going on every Friday. There's mass every Sunday. There's Islamic Muslim learning every week at the Dialogue Center. There's different activities sponsored by the Indian Student Association. There's a ton of different things going on campus that can introduce you to other religions. And I'm pretty sure that all those groups would be thrilled to have visitors and guests just who are there to learn more about their religion.
All right. And is there anything with religious literacy and in dialogue, is there anything we should try to avoid so we don't sound judgmental or to sound like we're blaming another religion for something?
Well, when you engage in a conversation, the attitude that one ought to take is more of a listening attitude rather than a judgmental attitude. As Danielle said, you may have your own religious perspective and you may be committed to your own tradition. You may believe your tradition is the truth and the person you're speaking to doesn't have the truth that you have. But you don't have to beat somebody over the head with that. Your attitude in the dialogue modality is to be a listener and to try to learn from somebody. And the people who have studied dialogue pretty much convinced that as a result of having that listening attitude, having an openness to the other perspectives that are coming your way, it actually changes what you yourself think because you make connections with things. It doesn't mean you agree with everything you're hearing, but it means that there are things that are being said that have a different spin, a different angle, and it's something that you can incorporate into your own thinking. And you don't need to... use this as an opportunity to witness. There are some people whose sense of religion would lead them to do that, that if I'm going to talk about religion, then my job here is to witness to the truth of my faith. But interreligious dialogue takes a totally different approach and says that if your attitude is to proselytize, to try to convert, then that's an attitude that's not going to lead to much that's productive in terms of the learning outcome. It may gain you some points in heaven because you've done what you believe your tradition is telling you to do. But in terms of a learning experience between me and you, as we're trying to learn from one another, that's not contributing very much.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think if you go, if you approach any kind of learning or dialogue with an open mind and curiosity and with an attitude of listening, that you probably won't make a faux pas or say something wrong. It's really the kind of motivation of why you're there that's important. That will frame your experience.
And it'll open up the freedom to ask questions, too, or at least it should. If you demonstrate an ability to be open and listening, that can allow you to ask questions that in other contexts might seem hostile, that might make a person defensive, but you can say, well, why do you believe that? And if your attitude is one that I really want to understand, I want to learn from this, then you're more likely to get a result that does lead to increased awareness of the other person's point of view on these things.
All right, you're listening to Prof Talks on WLVR 91.3 Bethlehem. We're here with Dr. Lloyd Steffen and Rabbi Stillman. We're talking about religious dialogue today. If you're just joining us, my next question is that, is it in a religious dialogue setting in the media and such, is religious parody and satire a touchy subject, or is it all right to satirize religion?
Well, that's a difficult question, because there are contexts within which these things are done, and sometimes there can be great offense. Now, having said that, religion is one of the things that people care deeply about, and as a result of them caring deeply about it, it's one of the things that can be subject to humor. So, you know, we have films like Life of Brian, which satirizes Christianity and the founder of Christianity, and I think it's a wonderful film. I mean, I laugh when I see it. You know, the question is, can you have a sense of humor about religion? And a lot of people do. A lot of people don't, because their tradition says, because of the unique sacred quality of what we're talking about here, holding something up for humor, and not ridicule so much, but just making sport of it in some way, is inappropriate. You know, and there are prohibitions on things. You know, there are religions that prohibit certain kinds of things from happening, whereas in the course of our ordinary daily lives, we don't necessarily respect those prohibitions. And in a context like the university, everything is sort of up for grabs, and we can make sport and make light of a lot of things. But it does depend on sort of the context and the attitude that you're bringing things in into. To go out of your way to make fun of something religious with the intention of aggravating and irritating somebody seems to me to be the wrong spirit of things. And something like Life of Brian didn't have, in my view, an attitude like that. There were people upset about that. There were people upset about The Last Temptation of Christ, which wasn't a satire, but it was just an unconventional picture of Jesus, you know, off the Nikos Kazantzakis novel. And, you know, when the movie came out, people boycotted it, and it was banned in certain places. You're dealing with holy things in religion, and to satirize them and to make light of them, and it can be a touchy, delicate thing. But I personally don't think it's unhealthy, but I also want to respect the traditions of the traditions where certain kinds of prohibitions are laid down, and I wouldn't violate them just to prove that I can. That doesn't seem to me to be quite an authentic engagement with other folks and other traditions.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll just add, I think it's good to satirize your own religion once in a while. In Judaism, we have a holiday coming up soon called Purim, where the whole holiday is really around making fun of ourselves. And I think that's healthy. You know, everyone should try it.
There was a Tom Robbins novel called Skinny Legs and All.
Yeah.
One of the things that was said in that book that struck me, and I've never let go of it, because I've now traveled to the Middle East, and I've been to Israel and to Palestine, to Palestinian Authority. But one of the things that Robbins says in there is that the whole problem in the Middle East right now is that people lack a sense of humor. There are reasons people lack a sense of humor in a strife, conflict-ridden area like that. But there's also a really deep truth in what was a lighter touch on life could make things a lot better. So that's an interesting, I think it's an interesting question to raise about the role of humor in religious matters.
Do you think Lehigh University fosters a sense of religious inclusion? Do you think Lehigh fosters a sense of interfaith dialogue and religious inclusivity?
I think we're working really hard to do that, and I think anywhere probably could always be better at it, but my sense is that most people of religion feel comfortable on campus and are able to practice their religion to some extent where they feel comfortable being here. I think that that in general, religion isn't always that visible on campus, and that in that way, some people may feel like it's hard to be religious because it's not what's seen as a norm on campus. But I think that when you go into different religious communities and you see what's going on, you see that actually religion is flourishing. It's quite vibrant. People are able to follow the customs and traditions that they need to follow. Maybe not to the extent that everyone wants to, but we're doing a pretty good job with that. And then we've also been working really hard to have more opportunities for interfaith dialogue explicitly, not just between people of religion, but also secular students, people of no religion, people who had no religious background growing up are just curious, or had religious background growing up and have now decided that that's not for them, but they might still be curious about other religions. So I think that we have a multi-faith initiative. We're having a multi-faith Shabbat dinner on February 26th at the Jewish Student Center from 6 to 8. So everyone's welcome to come there, and hopefully that will be a chance for dialogue. There are a lot of opportunities if you look for them.
Yeah, I think religious groups on campus do reach out to the campus and invite folks in to different events. You know, the Shabbat dinners, the Muslim Student Association will invite folks in to a breaking of the fast and different events like that. Though, to get back to your question, I think, though, at Lehigh, if you're part of a religious group, you're content to kind of be a part of that religious group and live your life inside, which is to say, I don't know that a typical member of a religious group on campus thinks about their membership as urging them to go out and engage in dialogue with others. It's more about group solidarity than it is about extending. But that doesn't mean the groups themselves don't try to extend themselves and reach out. So it's kind of a balancing act. I mean, the needs that students have are often connected to that sense of community and that sense of solidarity with others who are sharing similar kinds of beliefs. So, you know, we want to make sure that people who have a need for this can find a place where those needs can be met. And we do want to encourage religious groups to try to reach out to the campus and invite folks in. And the groups themselves, I think, are usually pretty open to having people come visit.
And as the cultural environment is ever changing, as I see it more towards secularization, do you think religion will, in the future, pertain to Lehigh, the Lehigh community?
Well, it's hard to figure out the future and where things will be. Is religion a part of students' lives and community members' lives? It is. Though you are also right, we live in a secular society. In many ways, it looks as if it's increasingly secular. On the other hand, you look around the world today, and it's as if religion is becoming ever more important in the lives of so many people in different places in the world. Just conflicts continue to show up. So, I mean, that's moving away from the Lehigh campus a good bit, but it's part of the reality because a lot of religious identity can get formed in reaction to secular things that are going on. It helps the secular nature of a society is one of the things that bring religious people together and encourage them to bond and create their community even more closely. So religion is going to continue to play a part in people's lives. Religion itself is affected by the secularism of our time. The idea that, you know, I'm spiritual but not religious is an expression of that. That spirituality is still a very important part of human being, and you know, even wellness models that want to be inclusive. The whole aspect of what it means to be a human and to be fulfilled as a human being recognize that there is a spiritual aspect that needs to be addressed. And people do that in different ways. Some people do it through traditional religion and through religious observance, and other people do it by finding alternatives to, say, going to church or synagogue or to the mosque. They will find like-minded people to be engaged in other things. Sometimes they're social justice things. Sometimes it has to do with just interests that people have that they want to share with others and do things with others. So that's actually kind of a complicated question when you start to unpack it a little bit. So,
yeah, religion is concerned with questions of meaning and life, and why are we here? What is our purpose? Am I living in the best way that I can be living in regards to my potential and in regards to other humans? And I don't think that I don't think there's really a reason to pit religion against secularity in the pursuit of those questions. Everybody holds them. So whether you define yourself as spiritual, religious, secular, humanist, everybody's trying to figure out, you know, what am I here for? What is my personal purpose? And, you know, and how can I fulfill it in a way that's going to make the world a better place? And I think that that's a real instinct that humans have. And I think religion has a lot of wisdom about that. And so do there are other sources of wisdom about that. But I see them kind of all as on a continuum together.
And kind of staying away from Lehigh campus for the next question, have you seen religious dialogue in popular culture? And if you have, how do you see it play out?
In popular culture, are you talking about music?
Television, any sort of medium that isn't going to your house of worship and having a sit-down discussion with someone of another faith?
Well, I'd have to think a little bit about that. I mean, there have been some television programs where there have been clergy people as major characters and things like that. But if you go back to what Danielle was just saying about some of the bigger questions of life that come up in religion, I think you find those things explored through the arts in general. And I think there's a way that religion itself is very much like one of the arts. It requires a certain kind of poetic sensibility. There are some people who are really good dancers and some people who can't dance, and there are some people who can do religion as it's transmitted, and there are others who sort of can't do that. There are different ways people find their way to address some of the important questions of life, and I think popular culture provides different kinds of avenues to explore those things. I think you'll find that in fiction. You know, a lot of fiction that, you know, can bring you to kind of reflect on what's happening in characters' lives and why did these things turn out the way they did. And you know where I look for things like this is sometimes, I haven't done this in a long time, but I used to have students who they formed their schedules around soap operas that they would watch. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've had students who've admitted doing anything like that, and I don't know that they do that anymore so much. But it did strike me that one of the things that's going on in soap operas are moral conflicts. somebody's lying to somebody else. Every movement from one episode on Tuesday to the episode on Wednesday is because the movement is because somebody has told a lie, somebody's cheating on somebody else, whatever. And it gives people an occasion, who are watching this, an occasion to reflect on what these different kinds of things are. So there's a kind of dialogue that's going on about important moral questions, and it's in a very accessible form. I mean, soap operas have, you know, somebody who just had a baby and there's some kind of a complication and they don't know what to do about it, and there are infidelities that are being dealt with, and these are some of the big problems of life that arise. And so popular culture does provide avenues for exploring these things. You know, your question sort of is asking, you know, is there dialogue going on in popular culture between, like, you know, Islam and Christianity? And I think that's a little harder to just point to things. But it doesn't mean that some of the bigger issues that are important to Christians and to Muslims are not being addressed. You know, what does it mean to be a good person and a faithful person? And what is the role even of religion or faith? I think those things do get explored in popular culture.
Yeah, I think if you look at the world and popular culture with a religious lens, like just with not religious lens, but with the lens of religion, you'll see it everywhere. I mean, we have a professor in the religion studies department, Monica Miller, whose whole field is on religion and hip hop. So I think that answers your question pretty well. And in terms of dialogue, you know, it might not be, like Lloyd said, we might not find, you know, point for point, a Buddhist and a Hindu sitting down next to each other and discussing their different religions. But I think taken as a culture, popular culture, kind of provides that dialogue because it is popular and so many different religious viewpoints are represented.
All right. You are listening to WLVR 91.3 Bethlehem. This is Prof Talk with Mike Presida, Dr. Lloyd Steffen, and Rabbi Stillman. We're talking about religious dialogue today. My next question is, let me think about it because I have a few questions. Do you know if we are with religious dialogue in mind, do you know that we are if we are trying to start a religious dialogue club here at Lehigh?
Yeah, we actually have something called the Multi-Faith Initiative that started last year. It was started by some students who wanted there to be more dialogue between religions on campus. And we've been kind of active in a sort of under the radar way really since last spring semester. And I think you'll start to see the group planning more and more events as we grow and as our capacity grows. But I think anyone who's interested in that, you know, it's there. It's just a matter of connecting up with the right people. Excuse me. And also, Professor Steffen and I, along with Father Hoffa from the Newman Center, we led a spring break trip to Rome last semester, last spring semester, which was focused on interreligious dialogue. And although we don't have the same trip this semester, there will probably be future trips like that over spring break. So there are a lot of opportunities out there. It's just kind of opening your eyes to it, maybe looking at the Dialogue Center website, looking at university announcements, or getting in touch with one of us.
Yeah, over the last 5 years, we've, in the Dialogue Center through the chaplain's office, we've sponsored three trips, the Rome trip last March, and then we had two trips to Israel before that. And the trips have all focused on dialogue and on trying to see how Christianity, Judaism, and Islam interact. And the trips to Israel were very rich experiences. We had the opportunity to go into the Palestinian Authority, to meet Muslims there, to meet Palestinian Christians, you know, to get a more complete picture of how some of the conflicts that are going on in that area of the world are related to politics and perhaps to religion. But we were really focused in on the efforts that are being made to create dialogue and peaceful interactions. And there are a lot of people somewhat under the headlines of things who are working to try to create more peaceful and just societies in Israel, Palestine. The trip to Rome, again, was an eye-opening experience because there is so much going on in that city. We think about it being dominated by the Vatican and by Roman Catholicism, and indeed it is. But there are other things going on there as well. There is a Jewish community. There is a Muslim community. There are Protestants running around. There are Buddhists and Hindus, and there are different people from different traditions. There are organizations and NGOs and things that are working to create opportunities for an exchange of ideas to create deeper understanding among people from different faith traditions.
Involved, what are the major stepping stones that we have two religions that are part of the Abrahamic religions represented in the studio today? Do you know the basic stepping stones in each religion that are common throughout the Abrahamic religions?
Well, when you say stepping stones, you just mean
things shared in common.
The things that are shared in common. Well, there are common things in the Abrahamic religions. Abraham being one of them. I mean, Abraham is considered the founder of these traditions in very important ways. Abraham is called a friend of God in all three of the religions. And I mean, one of the issues that goes on with the Abrahamic faiths is that each one historically, as they develop, claims a supersessionist position over the one that preceded it. And it creates some difficulties, you know, that we have the Hebrew religion, which becomes Judaism, and then Christianity comes along and claims to be some kind of fulfillment of that, and then of that tradition, and then Islam comes along and makes a claim over Christianity to be the final revelation. So there are always things being set up in these traditions that can lead to disagreements, and there are disagreements between these three traditions. But they do, all three of the traditions show respect for one another's texts, for the Abrahamic tradition. And I think there's just a general awareness that the people of the book idea that we have in Islam. Islam wants to respect both Judaism and Christianity. And you know, the stories told about Jesus, for instance, in the Quran and in some of the sacred writings of Islam. I mean, Mary, the mother of Jesus, is mentioned more in the Quran than in the Christian scriptures. You know, how do you figure that out? Well, it's because there's an encounter with this tradition between Islam and Christianity, and there is respect given to it, and Jesus is acknowledged as a great prophet and a significant prophet, as is, you know, Moses and Abraham in the Jewish tradition. So all of these traditions, you know, do have some things in common. They want to affirm an essential monotheism. Christianity is a little bit strange on that one because of its affirmation of the Trinity, and then you have to figure out what all that means. But Christians basically believe that they're a monotheistic faith as well. So, you know, when you talk about stepping stones or things in common, they are there to be found, and it's one of the reasons that those traditions are ripe for dialogue. Because there are some common affirmations that can be made in these different traditions, and there's understanding that can be gleaned from an encounter with folks from the different traditions.
Yeah, they also have a lot of shared values, which I think is really true not just of these three monotheistic religions or Abrahamic religions, but also really of all religions. You know, that you can really find in all religions some kind of value of hospitality, some kind of value of justice, of what, you know, some people would call charity, what we would call tzedakah in maybe in Hebrew or a similar word in Arabic, that, you know, of kind of helping even out the playing field for people from different walks of life. There's some kind of value of family usually, or just relations between other humans. I think if you, you know, if you start to look, there are a lot of shared values between religions, which can be a starting point for dialogue.
Speaking of dialogue, do we need more religious groups on campus to head up dialogue sessions, or do you think it would just have to be two people from different faiths saying we want to have a dialogue and interview and bring people in to listen to our dialogue?
Well, I don't know that it needs to be an either or on that. I think things can emerge, and if there are groups that would like to encounter other groups, and if there's anything we can do in the chaplain's office or through the dialogue center to create those opportunities, we're more than happy to do that. Sometimes it is helpful to have a representative from one tradition talk to a representative of another tradition, but you're getting two specific viewpoints there, and they probably will have their own idiosyncrasies and things like that going on as well. But I don't know why you couldn't do both of those things. I mean, either, you know, opportunities just need to be created for that to happen.
Yeah, I think that as much of an appetite as there is for interfaith encounter, interfaith cooperation on a service project or advocacy for some kind of injustice that people want to see change, or just getting together, I think as much appetite as there is could be met. It's just a matter of people wanting to do it and putting the legwork in and setting aside some time.
And with the setting aside time, should there be certain ground rules set before the dialogue happens?
Yeah, I mean, I think some dialogue happens just in the course of everyday life. The ground rules are the same as they are in everything in everyday life, which is just respect and openness. Yeah, being willing to hear other points of view. And kindness, politeness, all those things that we should be walking around practicing. And I think if you're talking about a more formal dialogue, it is good to have a shared understanding of, you know, how is this going to go? Okay, we're all here to learn from each other. Like I said at the beginning, we're not here to proselytize or convert or witness to our religion in order to change someone's mind. We're really just here as a way to get more information and share information about each other's religions. And, you know, and then the kind of typical ground rules for any conversation, like I statements and not interrupting and letting people say what they need to and hearing it through and being curious and open and all that, which I think most Lehigh students have the tools to put that together.
With the dialogue and setting ground rules, is there a certain point people should, if they feel themselves getting to a certain point, should they preemptively draw a line in the sand saying, okay, if I'm getting to this point and I'm outraged, I should take a step back, take a breath, and come back at this with a more even head?
When we talk about dialogue, we're talking about people coming together who are assumed to have different positions on things for whatever reasons. And we talk about interreligious dialogue, we're establishing at the outset that we've got people from different religious traditions, and in those traditions, people are going to claim that they have some kind of hold on truth. So what you have are two competing and perhaps incompatible notions of truth at stake here. Now, if you unpack those things, maybe the differences aren't so critical or stark. But the dialogue part is to do that unpacking work, to see, do we have some things, do we have some shared values? Are there places where we can have some kind of general agreement about perhaps moral things or a willingness to serve others, perhaps with a service project or something like that? So you can think about those kinds of things. If they feel like what's being challenged is something that is integral to their essential religious worldview, some article of faith, you know, if somebody were to say, well, you know, I believe divinity attaches here, and somebody else says, no, I think it attaches over here, and you have a real disagreement about something like that, that's the kind of thing where dialogue can really fall apart and break apart. And people may need to just say, wait a minute, maybe we've moved into an area where we know that there are disagreements, and what is the point of doing that? I mean, what's the point of a Christian wanting to witness to Christ over against a person from Islam or from Judaism who is not going to accept that point of view? I mean, isn't that known at the front end of things? So if it looks like that's what's being put on the table for discussion, it seems to me people could withdraw, as you say, and say, well, wait a minute, let's take a breather here and regroup and try to come back at this in another way. One of the hardest things to dialogue about is actually theological things. It's a little easier to have dialogue around ethics matters, because ethics matters, ethics itself as a field is an attempt to try to find some universal agreements about things, and or to articulate already held universal agreements. I think it's a little easier to find people agreeing that we shouldn't kill one another than it is to have an agreement about the divinity of Christ. So some of those theological encounters don't go very far.
And I think people can always say at any point in a dialogue, wait, like I feel a little offended by that, or you know, I think you just went a little bit too far. Let me tell you how I'm feeling and why I think that, or just ouch, like that was not something that was helpful to me in this dialogue. This is why, you know, I think as well as taking step back and a deep breath is always good for everyone at any point, but yeah, you shouldn't be afraid just because you're having a dialogue to voice disagreement.
Yeah, if somebody in a dialogue situation wants to use that as an occasion to make some sort of theological proclamation or something, that person should simply be prepared for a response to it that says, ouch, or that's not where I'm coming from, that's not what I believe. So you can put all that on the table. That can be part of a dialogue, but then you still have to think about, well, what is the next step? I mean, once we've agreed to disagree about something, where do you go from there? And sometimes these theological matters, if they get too specific and too doctrinal, they are not helpful routes for pursuing the learning objective that dialogue is ultimately trying to realize.
All right, and we're coming up on close to the end of the interview here on WLVR 91.3 Bethlehem. Are there any final words of wisdom you can to encourage religious dialogue?
Well, I would just say be open to the possibility of encounter with people who have different worldviews, different beliefs, and engage in different kinds of practices from what you do, and approach it as a learning experience. It's an enriching experience, and you know, in the university, we want to encourage that. We think everything a student does should be some kind of encounter with something new and different, and something that's going to increase their knowledge and their sensitivity to others. So I would say make yourself available to new experiences.
All right, just thinking about some very practical applications of interreligious dialogue. You know, earlier in this academic year, but at the end of the calendar year, there was a lot of rhetoric around in the media that was anti-Muslim. And many, many religious communities, including our own here in the Lehigh Valley and on campus, came out and issued statements that said, we support the right of Muslims to be in the U.S. as part of our society, like every other religion, and to practice their religion. That gesture was really appreciated by the Muslim community of the Lehigh Valley. And it's such a simple and, to me, obvious thing to say. But I think that once you start opening your eyes to connections that might exist or might not exist between religions and trying to build them, that you really understand that we can support each other in very significant ways that actually have consequences. And so it's not, at the end of the day, it's partly just sitting around and talking in a room, but it's not just sitting around and talking.
All right. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Prof Talk on WLVR 91.3 Bethlehem. We were here today with Dr. Lloyd Steffen and Rabbi Stillman of Lehigh University in the Religion Studies Department and the Chaplain's Office. Thank you both so much for coming.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prof Talk. To hear all the interviews and check out extended material, log on to our archives at WLVR.org.